is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. There's a lot to discuss in the news cycle for sure. But, you know, let's make sure too everybody understands it's important that the news and the polls and the information you're getting out there, I mean, it is twisted, it is tainted, and it is a lot of it is bad information. The problem is, as we'll discuss today, a lot of this is being fed to the American people as the gospel truth, and quite frankly, it is anything but that. So that's our job here. Our job and your job to help us is to get the word out there, what I call the out loud truth. It's important to acknowledge that here on Viewpoint This Sunday. And it's important you get over to AmericaOutLoud.com and share the truth with America. Start right at the top here with Bob France. And Bob is the morning news talk host at WHKAM 1420 in Cleveland. It's part of the Salem Media Group. And I love having Bob on because it's always a moment of truth. And we'll start here with the debates, Bob. And so we've got this, I love this. They call it the nonpartisan. Bob, when they put that word in your title, you know you're in trouble, don't you?
Amen to that. You better believe it.
Yeah, that's a qualifier. The nonpartisan, wink, wink, you know, Commission on Presidential Debates. Well, they confirmed, of course, on Friday, as you all probably know at this point, that the October 15th debate has been canceled. They wanted to do a virtual thing, which, of course, would take away a lot of what people are, you know, most want to know about Biden. Is he real? Can he speak? Can he talk? Or is he just a puppet? And that's been the argument right along. And you know that. Now, Biden, the campaign, immediately scheduled a town hall with ABC News for that night, almost immediately here. What do you make of this right now? And did they put their hand on the scale, I guess, is what everybody is worried about?
Well, there's no question about that. I mean, you know, let's go back to what you described, the nonpartisan presidential commission on debates. They're made up of a bunch of liberal Democrats and a bunch of never Trump Republicans. Now, the other side will say, well, they're half the Republicans and half Democrats. How is that not nonpartisan? Well, the answer is when you have never Trumpers, including a never Trumper that this commission chose as the debate moderator prior to, of course, the cancellation. It lets you know all you need to know about the fairness or the partisanship of that commission. Look, Steve Scully, everybody says, that's a nice guy. He's on C-SPAN. He's not on one of the, you know, the ultra right networks like Fox or OAN. He's not on the far left like MSNBC or CNN. It's right down the middle. Well, except for the fact that he's not, because everybody knows by now, and I'm not breaking any news here on your program, but everybody knows he broke into Washington as an intern for Joe Biden. But that's a long time ago, people say. Well, guess what? More recently, his Twitter timeline is filled in the last few years with praise and kudos for his friend Joe Biden and Never Trump messages, including the ultimate Never Trump editorial by David Brooks in the New York Times 4 years ago, Never Trump, not now, not ever. So this is a guy, and then we all know what happened as well on Thursday, not being particularly fluent in Twitter use. He intends to send a DM to Anthony Scaramucci, and instead it goes public, asking Anthony Scaramucci, one of the most fierce Trump critics, what his next play should be in dealing with Donald Trump, asking a never-Trumper for advice. Yeah. You know, and then they claim the old, it's the Joy Reid story. Oh, my account got hacked. That wasn't me. Give me a freaking break. The commission is biased. That moderator was going to be biased. And Donald Trump was absolutely ahead of the curve by saying, don't even think about it. There's no way I will participate. When Joe Biden gets to be in a cocoon with a laptop and who knows who's feeding what into it for him, or a teleprompter, or a cue cards, or an earpiece, or anything else. Not a chance. The guy, Malcolm, you know this. The guy has been a liar and a cheat for his entire professional life, lying about where he went to college, lying about how he finished while he was in college, lying about scholarships that he got to go to college, lying. And then we'll get into the plagiarism of so many speakers. He doesn't have an original thought in his head. He has only what people feed him. Yeah. And President Trump is thinking, I'm going to debate a guy who's got people feeding him his thoughts in a private setting where I can't have any control. It's absurd.
Yeah. He's not really, what you're pointing out, Bob, is he's not really a very bright fellow. He's not.
No,
speaking of Biden.
Not at all.
I mean, I imagine if he took an IQ test and we took that right now and distributed that, I mean, that would probably be very conclusive and would showcase to America what we're speaking about. You know, one of the things I never understood about these debates, and this isn't really about what I'm speaking about this election, but every election season, I see this debate commission and I see the debates, and my golly, I remember this in 08, I remember in 04. I remember in 2000, every election, and I see how twisted this is. Why is it the Republicans just go along to get along all the time? Because these debate moderators have always been to the left. The deck is always stacked against them. Why do they always go along and not fight or push back?
You know, that's a really great question. There's an old adage, you know, if you're gonna, and maybe I'm making it up, but I mean, you know, it's about street fighting. You cannot be afraid to get down into the dirt or into the sewers with somebody if that's where they're fighting. I think a lot of times the Republicans tried to stay above the fray. So here comes Donald Trump, and President Trump said, "There's no way in hell they're going to do that to me." And every time they try to get down into the sewer and try to slime Donald Trump, he says, okay, let's get there. And he goes down and fights them back. And nobody's ever done that before in this party, not to the level that he has. It's refreshing. And more importantly, Malcolm, it's effective. Yeah. If he hadn't fought like that in 2016, we'd be dealing with a re-election campaign for Hillary Clinton right now.
That's right. That's right. You know, one of the other things that we have to realize, Bob, is that, you know, Trump, again, was always going after the establishment. I mean, he said that, he promised that, he's delivered on that, unlike so many others. But, you know, the whole R&D thing, back to the Presidential Debate Commission or the nonpartisan business, you know, when you're going after the establishment per se, which is the collective, you know, Washington, D.C., LLC Incorporated, you understand?
Yeah.
Then that is a different ballgame, Bob, because that makes it that kind of, you know, that just pushes R's and D's totally out of the way. It makes them a moot point because all these people really, the Republicans, as well as the Democrats, as you know, corruption is throughout the system. I mean, you know that, Bob. I mean, it's pretty sick, you know? So this whole debate thing, what I'm saying, R's and D's, it's important to point that out to America right now that you can't always follow this. I think partisan party politics is, it could really sink America because right now we need to appeal to Democrats and to Blue Dogs and to the center independents, moderates. If they don't come on board, we could be in a heap of trouble in this election, don't you think?
I do think. I completely agree, particularly with the independents and the undecideds. The problem is, I think we are in such a unique time right now. There are very few of those. I think more so than any previous election that I can even remember. I think so many people are just, they're entrenched in their positions. They are pro-conservative and pro-constitutional republic, and they're pro-capitalist and they're pro-Trump, or they are pro-anarchy and they are pro-socialism and they are pro-Marxism, thank you, and they are pro-Biden. I think that center is much smaller now than it's ever been. The undecided who need a debate to make up their minds for them, I think, are very, very few and far between. Look, this is early voting started here in Ohio 4 days ago, and I'm told nationwide with the other states who have started it, there have been over almost 7 million votes cast already, and it's October 10th.
Yeah.
That's an extraordinary increase, and that's because people know I don't have to wait and make up my mind later on. I already know, and so I don't think there are as many of those moderates or independents that you think.
I'm going to talk to you next about this. New brainchild concept theory idea from Speaker Nancy Pelosi to remove an unfit president, which, of course, a lot of Americans right now are asking, how the hell do we remove an unfit Speaker of the House would be the real question people are asking, Bob. But she's got this whole theory she puts out, she says, for future presidents. Now, why in anybody's right mind with 20 some odd days till election day would any political person like this all of a sudden throw that on the barbie and say, hey, let's talk about how to remove an unfit president. Many people, of course, pointed to Trump, but Trump hit back right away and said, hey, wait a minute, this is not really about that. He said this is about Joe Biden, Sleepy Joe, about getting him out of there and appointing Kamala Harris. He said the Dems want that to happen fast because Sleepy Joe is out of it. He calls her crazy Nancy Pelosi, of course, in the 25th Amendment. What do you make of this story and how insane is it?
Well, I think the president's right. And, you know, at the risk of stating the obvious, Joe Biden is out of it. You know, you mentioned before, you know, if he took an IQ test, how would that go? It's more than just low IQ. It's low IQ added on top of or being expanded upon by cognitive decline. The guy is just, you know, he's going to be 78 if he becomes president. He's going to be the oldest president to ever be elected for the first time at 78. And he's in cognitive decline. So, yeah, I mean, look, if Nancy Pelosi really wanted to get rid of Donald Trump by way of the 25th Amendment, that would have been their very next step after the failed impeachment. You know, look, they impeached him, but of course they could not remove him. They tried the Russia hoax to try to remove him. They would have tried this months and months and months ago. The fact that they're trying it in 25 days or 25 days before the election, they know they can't get that done. It clearly is about future presidents, and to have that commission ready and waiting for a cognitively declined, low IQ, low functioning plagiarist and liar. Everybody uses the word Trojan horse. I buy it, man. I do, Malcolm. Yeah. I buy it. He is the Trojan horse that they'll wheel through the gates saying, look, it's just a moderate Democrat. And then they'll open it up. And here comes Kamala with the full on Green New Deal, court packing, you know, border That's erasing, all of, you know, police yeah. abolishing and all the other things that she's for.
You know, typically, Bob, in an election like this, certainly the economy is up there. In fact, Gallup just did a survey just last few days. And as standard procedure, the economy is top. It always is in every election because that's what hits your pocketbook in your personal life itself, but also healthcare, education, the usual go-to issues, Bob. However, in this election, I would say all of those are dwarfed, in my opinion now, Bob, because what really is one of the biggest issues of this election, and I'm trying to get all of America to really understand the severity of packing the Supreme Court and what this is all about, which, by the way, was attempted back in 1937, as I recall, with FDR. He tried to make the move on this then to secure his New Deal, which a lot of people were not happy are excited about here. So let's talk about this pack on the Supreme Court. Now, here's some facts that people need to know, Bob, and then you opine on it. Now, Biden, he has been against it in the past. I will tell you that right now. And everybody knows that he's on record as being against it because he knew as a political figure the danger of politicizing that third body from being a constitutional judicial branch to a political appointee body totally where you pack it with all your favorite political, you know, icons. And then you have a heavy hand to do whatever the hell you want to do in the country. It's pretty serious stuff. Now, Kamala Harris, though, Bob, she says, and I quote, that she was asked by the New York Times, are you open to expanding the size of the Supreme Court? She says, I'm absolutely open to it. There's nothing these people will stop at to getting the power back. We've got to convince every American to understand the severity of this.
Yeah, the only item that you left out there was the legislative filibuster, which is also on the table. When he said everything is on the table, he meant it. And look, yes, they are thinking about this. And yes, that's why Joe Biden refuses to answer and says, I could answer the question about court packing, but if I did, you don't write about it.
Can you believe
that?
And I
don't want anybody to write about it. I'll tell you after the election what I think about it, because the answer is yes. And the reason why, Malcolm, is the rules have changed. Mm-hmm. This is just flat out vengeance now. This is old world mafioso style. You took one of ours, we're taking two of yours. You get Amy Coney Barrett on this court right now, mm-hmm. then we're changing everything. We're going to put 15 members on it. We're going to make Puerto Rico a state. We're going to make Guam a state. We're going to make American Samoa a state. We're going to have DC a state. We're going to have 8 more senators in all very heavily liberal areas, and you're never going to see another court appointment again. It'll be a huge, massive majority by the Democrats. And it's literally just flat out revenge because of what they believe is, you know, the, you know, Merrick Garland situation in which he was cheated in their mind out of his seat on that court. And here comes Amy Coney Barrett. But the big picture here is that the American people need to realize is how important that is.
Never seen anything as flaky as the statement this presidential candidate made to the press out there in some sort of a hangar place with Kamala Harris, with talking through their mask again with nobody in their vicinity, but feeling like they have to do that. And you can only hear the muzzling and the mumbling of the crazy words. And he says it's a legitimate question. But let me tell you why I'm not going to answer the question, because it will shift all the focus. I mean, again, back to low IQ and somebody who's not thinking straight with whatever he's got, you know, that's, I don't think we've ever heard anything more insane from a candidate ever in our lives, Bob, is that statement. He shifted all the focus by saying, "What? I mean, is this guy all there or what?" Well, obviously he's not, Bob. Come on.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, it smacks of Nancy Pelosi with Obamacare. We've got to get this thing passed so that we can see what's in it. Vote for it, then we'll figure out what it is. He is literally saying, vote for me, then I'll tell you what I stand for. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine such a thing? I mean, why is court packing any different than your opinion on abortion, your opinion on border security, your opinion on taxes, your opinion on national security and military?
Exactly.
Why on earth can you get away with, I'll tell you how I feel about it after the election?
It's crazy.
Go
it's
vote
crazy.
For me. It's impossible to understand.
And Bob, I did a program, the two biggest issues of the 2020 election, and this is not the economy and health care and education and all the things that are primarily important to every single one of us. But that program you can hear Monday on The Voice of a Nation on my weekly program on America Out Loud Talk Radio, 6 p.m. There's an encore at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. So as we move along here, back to the election, and boy, Bob, you've seen this next story about the Ohio, the ballots again, everything that Trump has been talking about and others. So you got to remember, there's about, as you were addressing already, Bob, about 8 million ballots already cast in our country already is what the U.S. elections project right now. So people are voting in record numbers for sure. Now, what's happened in Ohio County, about 50,000 voters received an incorrect absentee ballot. This is on top of what happened in New York City with 100,000 voters. So we are seeing mistakes and errors. Bob, are we seeing more than usual, or are they just highlighted because the stakes are this time around?
I think both can be true. I think there are more, and I think certainly they're going to be spotlighted more because of all of the mail-in voting and the record number of absentee ballots that have been requested. You know, and of course, you add that to all of the unrequested, just mail-in votes, the live ballots that are sent out to people when the election boards have no earthly idea if those people still live there anymore, if they're actually people, if they're alive or dead or moved or cats or dogs. I mean, so yes, every single bit of this is going to be a brighter spotlight, but I'm concerned. And the reason why, Malcolm, is while President Trump won a very comfortable electoral victory in 2016, the individual states in which he got those needed electoral votes were decided by thousands, not millions. There are very, very tens of thousands of votes can swing an election. So if 50,000, Franklin County, by the way, is, you know, where Columbus is. It's our capital, state capital here. Franklin County, 50,000 people got the wrong ballots or did not get their right ballots, depending on how you look at it, could throw the entire state of Ohio, depending on, you know, what the majority of those are. It could throw Ohio one way or the other. Same thing could be true in a number of other battleground states that are going to be decided by a razor-thin margin. And if the boards of elections cannot handle this crush of absentee ballot requests that they're receiving, not to mention the states that are doing mail-in voting, sending those out to everybody, not to mention, and I'm not trying to disparage the Postal Service, really, but let's just be honest. It sometimes can be too much for them to handle, and not to mention the corruption aspect. This does disparage them, but we have seen examples of individual postal workers dumping, campaign flyers for President Trump or for other conservative Republicans into dumpsters. They're not going to deliver them. You do have human, there's human error, which is what's happening in Franklin County. And then there is human, opinion or however you want to phrase the
mischievous
the kind of
behavior,
using that word. Yeah, but just their own biases of human beings, where it's not a mistake. It is an intentional act. And to be honest with you, I just don't know. This is why President Trump says, I'm not going to just concede automatically unless I know it was a fair election.
Yeah, well, and when he says that, of course, the left has, they have an aneurysm. Oh, my God, he's a dictator. He's not going to leave. We got to get him out of there. I mean, that's usually the talking point that happens after that. Let's talk about the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House. These are imperative right now in the final weeks here of the election here. The Senate is very precarious, Bob. The GOP, they have to defend 23 seats. Clearly, the Democrats just 12. That number one starts the race. But there are some real troubled spots in there, and some even Lindsey Graham, to that point, is having trouble defending his seat. But you've got Perdue, Ernst, Collins, Daines, Tillis, a lot of others that are sort of tedious. What's your make on the Senate? Can the Republicans retain the Senate, or is it lost at this point?
I do not think it's lost, but I do not think one will happen without the other, meaning if President Trump wins, the Republican turnout in those battleground states, and yes, in those battleground Senate races, will indeed carry them to victory as well. The Republicans will hold the Senate and the president wins. However, if Joe Biden wins this thing, again, I think it's a matter of turnout. I think that the Democrats are going to come out in full force for those particular vulnerable Democrats, and they will take the Senate. So when this is all over with, it's either going to be an all-blue all-blue government, really all three branches going to Pelosi's House. I think they would keep that too, and then have a Democrat Senate and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, or President Trump would still have his control of the Senate, his party control of the Senate, battling Nancy Pelosi in the House, which I think is a much harder thing to do.
It really does come down, though, Bob. What we're talking about is the down ballot here, the momentum of the race. And really, it probably is all up for take right now and keeps right now in the last 2-3 weeks of the race, don't you think?
I do. I really do. I cannot imagine President Trump winning and yet them losing the Senate. And I cannot imagine it the other way around. And right now, dude, really is all up for grabs. I'll be honest with you, Malcolm. I hate to just be formulaic because a lot of people have said this already, and I hate to be redundant. But I really believe that President Trump is going to win on election night. But then once all of those ballots that have not yet been counted and there's lawsuits over, you remember what happened in Wisconsin a week and a half ago where they said, if we can't read the postmark, we're going to accept it. We're just going to assume it was there before, you know, the postmark, the deadline. And we're going to, so there's going to be a big fight over which ones are accepted, which mail-in ballots are not, which ones could be proven, which signatures match. It's going to be hanging chads all over again in a different way. And then that's when they steal it. So, and again, I know that's kind of a formula a lot of people have said and a lot of people fear. That's what I fear. I fear that the president will win on the election night and then have it taken away from him by mail-in voting and all kinds of other fraud and chicanery in the coming weeks.
Well, you just answered where I was going to ask you next, and you were very forthcoming. I appreciate it, Bob France, always. Again, it's really going to come down. Nobody can take anything for granted right now is the bottom line. And all this, everything is on the table right this moment here. You got to look at both of these campaigns and both of the policies that they're looking to enact in our nation. And clearly, if you love your country and you respect the Constitution, or you love what the framers put together in their brilliancy 245 years ago, then there is probably only one path forward, my fellow Americans. And if you don't believe that's the case, well, welcome to a new Marxist or the United Socialist States of America here. And that is not playing anything, being cute here. That is a fact of life right now.
No.
So. Right, Bob?
That's not an overstatement. That is not an overstatement. That is not hyperbole.
You're listening here to the voice of Bob France, and really love having him on. What a great opening to Viewpoint today. So up next, we have a very interesting gentleman, Bill Hagerty, who will be, I'll tell you right now, the next senator from Tennessee. He's on next, and very interesting. Looking forward to talking to him. He has been endorsed by President Trump and the Trump administration, of course, the campaign. But this is going to be a very interesting conversation, taking the Senate race forward, as Bob and I were just talking about. And after that, Elvita King, Ginger Howard on, and we'll talk about some of the tendencies of where racism and the civil unrest in our nation are. We have that amazing second hour coming up after that with Michael Johns. Stay right there, friends. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Welcome back to Viewpoint, and let's talk next about the future of the United States Senate. Joining me on the program now is Bill Hagerty, and he is the Tennessee Senate candidate, former U.S. ambassador to Japan. He was a transition leader for President Trump, in fact. He's endorsed by President Trump and Vice President Pence as well. He won the Republican primary on August 6th, and he is now front and center to replace the retiring Senator Lamar Alexander. And he's running against Marquita Blackshore, who's an activist from Memphis, by the way. So welcome to the program, Bill. It's good to have you. And it looks like that race is very interesting in Tennessee. Let's talk about the big U.S. Senates across the country first, okay? The Democrats right now are trying to flip the U.S. Senate. Clearly, that is their mode. They see what this president, along with the majority leader Mitch McConnell, have done with the judges, for one thing, in the Senate over the past 3.5 years has been a big focus for this administration. Now, the Republicans right now have a razor-thin margin, 53-47. And problem is, or the challenge is, not so much the problem, but the challenge is there are 23 seats they are trying to defend here, whereas the Democrats only have like 12, I believe it is. So that's a hell of a difference right
that's
here,
correct.
Number one. Yeah. Some of these races are really, really tricky. And I think people are getting a little concerned, and I'd like to get your view from the top. I mean, if you just look at just a real quick example here, Senator Martha McSally in Arizona, Tom Tillis in North Carolina, Susan Collins in Maine, Steve Daines in Montana, Joni Ernst in Iowa, Cory Gardner in Colorado, and even Lindsey Graham in South Carolina, and many of these are toss-ups right now, very, very close. What do you make of this, and can they retain the Senate?
Well, what I make of it is that we're at a very critical point in our nation's history. I really feel like we're at a crossroads, and you know, Chuck Schumer made it clear. Everything is on the table if they win. He said, we will not waste the majority if we win. And let me decode that for you for a few minutes. What's going to happen if we were to lose the Senate, if the Democrats were able to obtain control? Think about the courts. You mentioned the great progress that has been made the past 3.5 years, a little more than that, under President Trump and Leader McConnell. I think we've turned over close to 25% of the federal bench. And the average age of those judges has moved from the vicinity of 60 years for both Bush and Obama down to about 45 years of age. So this is going to be a lasting impact on the judiciary, moving back toward strict interpretation of the Constitution, not the types of judges that will make it up, but judges that will interpret the Constitution as it was written. Here's what Schumer wants to do. They want to come in and pack the court. That means they would like to move from 9 to 13 justices on the U.S. Supreme Court. Here's what they'll do next. They'll appoint activists as their picks. Those next four justices will all be liberal activists. They will transform the United States Supreme Court from a judicial body to a hyper-legislative body that's not answerable to the public at all. Remember, these justices have lifetime appointments. So they want to create an alternate legislative body, a super legislature that's not answerable to the public, where they can impose and backdoor their liberal policies that they could never get through the Congress. We can't let that happen. But that is a clear and clearly articulated goal. And you've seen in the debate so far where both Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have refused to answer the question of whether or not they would pack the court. In fact, Joe Biden has been asked directly. And what he said, if I answer your question, it'll become the major headline. It will dwarf all the news. So I'm not going to answer till after the election. I think we know the answer. And it will be absolutely devastating to the America that we would know, because they will destroy the Constitution if they do this. Yeah. It gets worse, though. It gets worse. They're going to add a couple of extra states. They've already teed up D.C. I've looked for them to bring Puerto Rico on board as well. That means four more Democrat senators. That means a dilution of our voice. We can't let that happen. The Green New Deal, from a policy standpoint, will be devastating to our economy. That's what they're talking about doing, pushing us over the cliff into socialism. Speaking of socialism, look at what they want to do with our healthcare system. They call it Medicare for All. What it does is it eliminates the private healthcare, the private insurance that most of us utilize through our companies and businesses and jobs and employment. Mm-hmm. What it will do is it will impose a government-run system that will sanction, that will ration, that will socialize the healthcare system here in America. Yeah. Again, totally transforming it, worsening it to a socialist system. Mm-hmm. And then their policy of defunding and dismantling the police. The most ludicrous thing I think any of us have ever heard. Can you imagine that they're standing on that? They want to see chaos and violence. That's Chuck Schumer's world. America with chaos and violence dominating the streets. Yeah. That's what we're talking about here. We lose control of the Senate.
Well, that's a good roundup right there. Interestingly enough, one footnote to the Puerto Rico point you made there. The governor there has endorsed President Trump, interestingly enough as that is, even with what you say there, that they are talking for sure statehood and D.C. Probably what's become now the most important, it may very well be, Bill, the most important issue in this election is what you just talked about there with the courts themselves and the Supreme Court, packing the Supreme Courts. Now, here's the challenge with all that, that all Americans need to pay attention to, Bill, and that is this. Typically, if you look at the way they have done, they have run their business, the left, the Democrat Party, they typically legislate from the bench. That is what they've been doing to get their policies approved by going to the courts to back them up and approve that. And that has been their go-to plan. Now, what you say in normal situation, that wouldn't make a lot of sense, but it does make sense now. And that does seem to be the plan. What I don't understand is how does Biden think by saying it would be the biggest story? He's made it the biggest story by not answering the question. I mean, I don't understand where that comes from. Do you?
I think you've made your point very well. And we're about to see something else. That's the Democrats on full display, mm-hmm. trying to destroy a very solid constitutionalist jurist, yeah. with Amy Coney Barrett. That starts on Monday. And I think that this is going to be the story. And Biden's refusal to answer the question, I think, Malcolm, I love the way you've articulated it, because I think he's making it an even bigger story than ever. Because we will see the Democrats, if they do even a fraction of what they did to Brett Kavanaugh, it's going to so repulse the American electorate. It's going to drive people to the polls like never before.
Yeah, it is a pivotal point right now. And Americans are going to have to make a decision, Bill, as to whether they want to bring our country back to our founding roots and honor our Constitution. And that's what really President Trump has done with his Supreme Court picks, or whether we want to make, as you say, into it a political body. There's no bigger issue right now. I mean, even everything across the board, including healthcare, they're important. In the economy, yeah, but I'll tell you what, that Supreme Court right now has become, I think, the major issue. And I think the president will need to push back on that hard, as you're doing right now. Now, looking at the Senate, let's keep going here now. So one of the things that's happened in a lot of these races, as I've studied and looked down into some of these races, Bill, what's happening is the Democrat Party is outspending many of the Republicans in a lot of these races. And I'm talking in many of them 2-1. A perfect example is Arizona. He has spent spending $37 million on ads versus McSally, who's spending $18.6 million. I mean, these numbers are crazy. Where are you in numbers there in Tennessee as compared to these numbers in Arizona?
Our race is one that I've run like a business person. You know, my background, I've been a businessman my entire life. We've laid out our plan. We're executing our plan. And my goal is to stay off of the list of, you know, hotly contested races. At the same time, we're not taking anything for granted. I want to be clear about that, but I'm out every day. I'm going from end to end in this state. We're campaigning, we're pushing hard, we're listening to Tennesseans and making certain that we understand the needs and concerns of people here in Tennessee, because I don't want to be just an average senator. I don't even want to be just a good senator. I want to be the best possible senator I can be for the state of Tennessee. And we are not leaving anything in the stands. We're putting it all on the field right now. And as I say, as long as I do that, I think I will stay out of that category that you just described, yeah, of these hyper-contested races. That's my goal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, traditionally, it was like when you had all this money, and you spent all this money, it was a big deal, Bill. But you know who changed the narrative on that? And it's just an important point, is President Trump. You know, he really honored the tried, true and tested values of what it meant to be a conservative. And I remember back in the race, same thing in 2020 here. He's doing more with less money as he won in 2016. Hillary Clinton way outspent him. But yet he runs the campaign as he would as a conservative, as a businessman, which is what you just said. That shouldn't be lost on the American people that you're frugal, that a political person like that is running for high office is frugal and cares about the almighty dollar.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, that's how I ran my primary. We were outspent when you had the groups that came in and everything. We were outspent. Again, executing a business plan, being deliberate and making the most out of every dollar is absolutely critical. We're still raising money. Don't get me wrong. We still need fuel in our tank to get across the finish line, but we're making the most out of every dollar. And I have the utmost confidence that there is a strong voice, a silent majority that's going to step up on election day, just like we did back in 2016. And, you know, I went in for 6 months full time and volunteered in 2016 to help candidate Trump get elected. And you remember what the polls were like back then.
That's right.
6% chance of winning, 8% chance of winning, no path to 270. You had people like Ted Cruz out trying to find ways to, you know, undo the president in the convention. All of that stuff was going on. But at the end of the day, the silent majority stepped up, regardless of what the polls said, and demonstrated that we really do believe in the America that we've grown up and grown to love. And we do not want to see socialism in America. The president has made that very clear. As long as he is the president, we will not be a socialist nation. As long as I'm a U.S. senator, I'm going to do everything I can as well to make certain we don't move in that direction.
Yeah, yeah. This is simply not just another election for sure, because the stakes are what they are. And there's so much more to this narrative that is being pushed out there, including one of the stories here. And I don't know if you have seen this, but the plan that AOC, it's what is it called? They have a 2021 agenda that the far left, the progressives, and I'm talking the AOC, the squad, and many others, in fact, are pushing right now for this plan. You see this plan of progressives. They're pushing out there right now to get them to embrace that Biden. It's called the People's Charter, is what it's called. And
I like the word manifesto better.
It is a manifesto. Yeah, no, it is. I think America has to wake up to this is what I'm suggesting and understand. So they're going to have a hard time, I think, keep trying to unite their party when you've got the left going off like that to create a people's charter, Bill. And speaking of which, I want to jump right in now to the Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her 25th Amendment spectacle, I guess you'd call it here. But this was on Friday afternoon. She released there. This concept or her idea about having in trying to put a plan together to invoke the 25th Amendment somehow. And there's so many mixed messages coming from the speaker. She's questioning the president's health and, of course, his mental state as she goes and does this. And what is the speaker trying to accomplish now in the ninth inning of a race here? What does this accomplish?
You know, she's lost control of her party, I think, is what's happened. You mentioned AOC, and they like to call themselves the progressives. I would rather call them Marxist, but she has lost control of her party. And, you know, I think that at a time like this, leaders should be united to support our president, to help us work our way through this pandemic, get our economy restarted. She's been willing to hijack our economy to try and go in and, you know, fix the balance sheets of states like her own in California that have not been, you know, conservatively run. I'll tell you, the people in Tennessee, we've got the strongest balance sheet in the nation. We have the lowest debt per capita in America. We don't feel like we should be subsidizing the poor decisions that local leaders have made in California, New York, New Jersey, Illinois. That's what she's been willing to do, though. She's been willing to hijack economic aid to companies, businesses that have gone out of business. She's been willing to hold up aid of unemployment. We need people that are real leaders to step up. And she's just demonstrating the fact that she lacks any sort of leadership skills. You know, business leaders like myself are willing to step up. We understand this. I think that the Senate desperately needs more people with a business background like I have.
Talk about the impact on COVID in Tennessee now.
Mayors and governors politicized the pandemic.
That's right.
And they've done it at the expense of the economy. Mm-hmm. Here in Tennessee, you know, this is the multiple of people who have lost their businesses, lost their jobs, or had their wages and hours cut back significantly, far higher than those who have actually suffered from the virus. And believe me, my heart goes out to those who have suffered from the virus. Many have lost their lives, but by far the economic impact here in Tennessee has been much greater. So I'm pleased to see us taking steps to move back to reopen our economy. And we've got to get back. We can't afford another shutdown, which is exactly what the Democrats would like to do.
Obviously, you're in good position there in Tennessee. It seems you're not, as you just said moments ago, in that one of those pivotal, hotly contested races. It looks like you could very well become the next senator there from Tennessee. Having said that, looking at the country as a whole, and what's the final message to our country and Americans in this pivotal election with the president now and what he's up against? Because he's fighting the race of his life here.
Well, Malcolm, I think that not only is this the most important election of our lifetime, mm-hmm. it may be the most important election in our nation's lifetime. Going back to the points that we discussed, Democrats' goal to fundamentally change the Supreme Court and destroy our Constitution, it really is a choice now. Do we want the America of opportunity, of liberty, free enterprise, or do we want the socialism that AOC, the Squad, Bernie Sanders and you know, Nancy Pelosi are pushing upon us? It's that important. So my message is, please turn out and vote. Please support financially candidates like me, other candidates that are running for the Senate, and support our president. Again, we're working very hard here in Tennessee, not only to win the Electoral College, to get a majority of the vote here for President Trump. We're working our hearts out to make sure that we run up the score. And we're working to support Republican candidates, not just the national candidates like myself and President Trump. We're working up and down the ballot to make certain that we support and elect conservatives at the local level, at the state level. That's how we're going to maintain a strong America. And that's how we're going to stand up to this supposed blue wave that seems to be coming over the bow with all of this money from Act Blue.
We're speaking here today, friends, with Bill Hagerty. Now, his website is teamhagerty.com, and you can go there and check out all of the issues that he is hot against, and you can donate there as well to teamhagerty.com there for Bill Hagerty, very potentially the next senator from Tennessee here. And again, the future of the U.S. Senate, that is going to be a story we'll be continuing to follow here. Moving forward here. The other big story that we're talking about is his continual attack against the president as a white supremacist and a racist, and you know the narrative out there with our civil unrest. Up next, Alveda King and Ginger Howard, who also have a new book out, Colorblind. We'll pick that up next, just after this one.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio. As we join you back here on Viewpoint, well, listen, you know, the part of one of the big election narratives that we continue to talk about is our great America cities and what's happening across our great nation. And a lot of people understand what's happening with all this racial divide that has taken place in our country. It is a very important topic and one we need to continue to talk about and slay those dragons, if you will, here. Let's start next and talk to here with Evangelist Alveda King joins us. She's the Executive Director of the Civil Rights for the Unborn with Priests for Life and the founder of Alveda King Ministries. Also, Ginger Howard is here. She's the National Committee Woman representing the Georgia Republican Party. They are both the co-authors of a fascinating book, We're Not Colorblind, Healing the Racial Divide. So I think that's a good place to start, both Alveda and Ginger here, is the racial divide. And I'm going to do something different. I'm going to go right to you first, Ginger, and put you right on the spot here initially. And when we talk about the racial divide, how do we heal the racial divide in America?
Thank you for having me on your show. The number one way, Alveda and I are both Christians, so we are coming at it from a biblical perspective that we believe that Christ is the only healer and that we have to empathize and realize that we are all, our book is based on Acts 17:26, that from one man, God made every nation. So we're really one blood. There are different ethnicities, but there's only one race. And when we have that conversation with people, we help people to see it completely differently. So we start a conversation and then we lead to the healing.
Alveda, you and I have talked many times about the racial divide in our nation over many years now, and other factors that tear our country apart. This is a big conversation today because we seem to have a bigger racial divide than we've had prior. How do we heal the racial divide in America?
Malcolm, this is just the perfect time to have this discussion about race. Ginger and I, of course, wrote the book together, We're Not Colorblind. We have our eyes wide open. We see color, we see ethnicity, but we celebrate it. And so what we're having now in America is a lot of race wars and all of that. Some people are trying to say that America is systemically racist. Well, that's not exactly true because all Americans are not racist. So for us to be systemically racist as a whole nation, over half of us have to be racist, and that's not true. Now, we do know that there's a group of people, they call them 10%ers and that kind of thing, that kind of run everything, even above politics. And they pull strings and they swing things back and forth, and it just pleases them to have people fight over skin color. Mm-hmm. However, Martin Luther King Jr., my uncle, said, we must learn to live together as brothers, I'll add as sisters, or perish together as fools. So science says by DNA, it's our red blood that shows what race we are, one human race. Religion says that, philosophy says that. So if we can kind of just remember that, then we can deal with this racial divide.
Yeah, I like the way you always break it down, Alveda, to just basic DNA and principles for people to understand where that racial divide is. You know what we have forgotten at this point, I think I continually point out, and you hit the nail on the head right there. You know, what was once a beautiful American value, I thought that was one of the awesome things about America, was that we were all different, and I thought that was really cool. I mean, growing up as a boy, I'm saying, I embraced that diversity. What I thought was our uniqueness and just an amazing thing about America is what the political operatives are using to divide our nation. This has become a political tool more than anything else, and it's being used to separate the people and divide them. Alveda, we've got to get Americans to understand this, because if we don't understand this, they are continuing to go down the road of dividing our nation, and you can see what's happening to our great American cities. Give us a few, and I want to go to each of you with this. Give me a few points on specific action steps we can take as a people, please, to heal that racial divide that we're speaking about and embrace our diversity, not be opposed to it. Alveda, what are they?
Malcolm, and I don't say this as a platitude. You're always so brilliant. You hit it right on time, and you always do. And so I'm so grateful for that. There was a scripture I read this morning talking about getting understanding. We have to have understanding. And once we begin to understand the climate, then we know that the social gospel and social justice will not work. However, we're going to, you know, government's not going to be able to answer all the problems of the people. Skin color battles will not resolve that. That's the basis of our book. We're Not Colorblind with Ginger. We took our unique, diverse positions and put them down on paper. And then out of that, we found what we have in common. And so we can learn to live together as sisters, and we are not perishing as fools. So what we have to do first is, Malcolm, we've said this before, you're not your race, I'm not my race, Ginger's not her race. We are the human race. We start there as a human race, and then we move forward celebrating diversity and ethnicity, but coming together as human beings, and we do it in a peaceful and nonviolent manner.
So Ginger, let's talk about the action steps that we take, because, you know, this conversation we're having right now, every American needs to hear this, because it actually is the answer to solving the racial problems when we embrace what people are trying to divide and separate us. What I find is a very beautiful thing is exactly what people are using in the opposite direction. What are the action steps in your mind, Ginger?
Well, one of the things I believe is we need to educate. We need to educate our children that we are not colorblind. Alveda always reminds us that colorblindness is a medical condition that you cannot see. You can only see black and white. We do see color. That is the beauty of this, that God made us all different, but at the same time, the same in that we're one race. And so instead of saying white people are bad because of the color of their skin, and there's a thing called white privilege, and what makes you, you know, and trying to make people feel guilty because of the color of their skin, or doing the same thing to a black colored, you know, because you're a brown color, because you're a black color, you're less than. That is what's going on right now, of trying to divide people on the color of their skin. And even with the organization Black Lives Matter, we believe Black Lives Matter, but the organization has hijacked that phrase and has tried to divide people based on the color of people's skin. So having the conversation and teaching our children and each other the truth, because one of my favorite scriptures is that you shall know the truth and the truth will set you free. And I think there's so many lies being spread now.
Yeah. Well, what's happening now is the Marxists are on the move and they're outsmarting thing combined with the political operatives. And the left typically always use the reverse psychology, which is what they did with BLM. They use reverse psychology to get you to think one way when exactly they have the back door open and they're pushing their Marxist agenda on America. It's a pretty sick, but what we're really talking about here, ladies, in my world for Malcolm, is it, what I talked to you before about, Alveda. It's the fight of good versus evil. It is the central point of everything that we deal with on a daily basis, is the fight of evil in our nation. It's the basis of my show and my platform and my life. When God put me in this position to do the work I'm doing, it is because it's to fight that good fight. Alveda, when we talk about family values, you talk about family values in the book in a significant way. And this is a point I want to bring out now, because, listen, as you know, I have two teenagers that are now 17 and 18. They've grown up since we first started talking, Alveda. They're now much older. And, you know, and they know, they don't miss anything, my kids. They see what's going on in society, and they hate this racism talk. They despise it, because they knew from us, they knew from growing up with me, that that was a non-starter, and it just wasn't part of the vocabulary. Don't we learn this thing as kids, is our family values and what we're taught from those values?
I am meeting so many Americans of every ethnicity. And you said it at the top of this segment. You said that we are diverse. You know, America was once called the melting pot. Mm-hmm. And everybody except the Native Americans were immigrants in the early days of this nation. Martin Luther King Jr. said, we may have come over on different ships, but we're all in the same boat now. Now, this generation, the younger people get it because they get the science. They can see it very clearly, and everybody's doing all the DNA checks and finding out that we really have more in common than we thought we did, regardless of skin color. So we have to be very honest with young people. That's why I said America is not systemically racist. There is systemic racism in America, in the systems, by those who govern it with their money and selfish ambitions. So we have to know that everybody does not have that perspective. Everybody in America is not racist. Everybody in America is not, you know, selfish. But anybody is a racist if they think they are a separate race. If we don't understand that we are one human race by one blood, then that makes us racist, because we're thinking we're dividing according to skin color and calling ourselves different races.
To that point, haven't many evil people hijacked that narrative? Isn't that what they've done? They've embraced it and they've hijacked the narrative that you're speaking about.
Playing the race card. They're playing the race card. So what we're doing, and Ginger and I didn't even know, I don't know if I told you, she dreamed after we went to two events at the Martin Luther King Center, and she had a dream that we were supposed to do a book. God downloaded that the whole 8 of the chapters to me right away, and we started the book. And that's where we started. And God used two women, a Caucasian and a Black woman, mm-hmm. with different experiences, but a heart that could blend and come together. And that's what we've done.
Yeah, it is the commonality of that uniqueness that you're speaking about that presents itself in the book. The book is excellent. It is. We're not colorblind. It is in the America Out Loud bookstore, by the way, as well as other books from Alveda as well are in there. But you can get that link right off the navigation bar, my friends, right at AmericaOutLoud.com. Ginger, in the book, you talk about who is your neighbor? Who is my neighbor? Is it the homeless man we passed by on the street today? Is it the old woman at church who has no family? Is it the young man in prison? Talk about that moment, that phrase there. That's very special what you say there.
Well, thank you, because the Bible tells us to love the Lord our God with all our heart and to love our neighbor as ourselves. So what does that mean? Who is our neighbor? And we, as Alveda so beautifully said earlier, we are all one human race. And so we are all ultimately children of God. And so therefore, if we pass somebody on the street or we see a need and we turn our backs or turn away, then we're not loving our neighbor as ourselves. Everybody takes care of themselves. They feed themselves, they bathe, they get asleep. I mean, they take care of themselves. But are we, I think sometimes our society has become so selfish that we're not thinking of others. And so that is one of the reasons we wrote this book, because we saw that there was a need to understand other people's upbringing. And you might not can ever really fully understand, but you can at least try to put yourself in someone else's shoes by listening and learning and loving others who have maybe had a different life experience than you have.
And I have to mention to folks, Alveda, that, and I don't know how you find the time to do all this is beyond me, but you have another book out that just was released, I understand, called Why Trump? and at a pivotal time of the election, that's an important book, isn't it?
Well, let me tell you, Ginger and I was working on a Trump book. It was going to be At the Real Donald Trump or something like that. And I was putting it together, and then Ginger called. So I assumed that meant I was supposed to forget about the Trump book and mm-hmm. do We're Not Colorblind, which mm-hmm. we did. And so I couldn't get the traction on the Why Trump. But then not too long ago, after we had released We're Not Colorblind, God said, man told you not to write that book. I didn't tell you not to write that book. So I had to release a Why Trump memoirs. So when you see that, there are more pictures with about a paragraph or two of me describing where we were and why Trump, why I support the president of the United States. That's how I ended up with two books at one time. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, it is. Now I understand fully. And thanks for explaining that. Why Trump? I've got to check it out and see. We've got to get that in the bookstore for you as well there. That is a beautiful story there. And you've developed a unique relationship with the president. And it's been very, very cool to see that happen here.
And Malcolm, there's one more. It all started with an apple. That's mm-hmm. dealing with human sexuality. And it's very intriguing. I apologize for the cover. It may show a little too much skin, but in today's world, they'll say it's very modest. Mm-hmm. So it all started with an apple. Look for that one, too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Alveda King, Ginger Howard. There's a lot more to talk about. We'll catch up with both of you again. My fellow Americans, what a program. What a show today on Viewpoint as we continue to just bring it to you here. What a great way to end here with Alveda King and Ginger Howard. Again, the entire program has been incredible. Now, for the next hour, we have Michael Johns on with us, and we'll dive into a lot of these issues in the presidential campaign, as well as what it will take for this election and have victory for President Trump. A lot coming up here, as well as the SCOTUS, the courts, and the race itself. So that's coming up in the next hour here, friends. Thank you, as always, for being with me on the mission. It's time to get involved and get loud.